The New Testament. Dun, 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 dun. You're an awfully quiet group this morning. What's going on? All right, let's talk about the New Testament. You guys ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, the New Testament. I'm going to give you six lines of evidence that begin with the letter E that hopefully will show you that we can trust what the New Testament writers are saying. Okay, they all begin with the letter E. I'll just list them here. We don't have time to go through all these this morning, but we'll go through, say, probably four of them. Okay, first of all, we have early testimony. I'll explain these later. I'm just going to list them now. Secondly, we have eyewitness testimony. Thirdly, we have embarrassing testimony. Number four, we have excruciating testimony. Number five, we have expected testimony. And number six, we have extra-biblical testimony. Extra-biblical testimony. Now, in I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, there's a chapter called The Top 10 Reasons We Know the New Testament Writers Told the Truth. Here are six of them. Okay, and the Stealing from God book, same kind of thing. We've got these all listed in there. All right, so if you want to go further, you can get that. Let's start here at early testimony. Early testimony. And this is going to show us that these documents were written down early. Let's go back into the first century. And there are two events in the first century that all scholars agree occurred. Even if they're atheists, they agree this occurred. And that is that Jesus was killed by crucifixion sometime in the early 30s, whether it's between 30 and 33 AD. Okay, the temple and the city of Jerusalem were destroyed by the Romans, the Roman general Titus, in 70 AD. Nobody disputes this. Now let's take a look at what's going on between those two bookends, or those two big events, in the first century. We'll work backwards. We know Paul was killed sometime in the mid to late 60s by Nero. We have good evidence for that. We also know that James, the half-brother of Jesus, who wrote that little book in the New Testament called James, dies as a martyr in the very city of Jerusalem that he's alleged to have risen from the dead in, or that Jesus is alleged to have risen from the dead in. The Sanhedrin, the Jewish ruling council, throw him off the Temple Mount, and then they stone him to death. Now, how do we know this? Does any New Testament document tell us this? No, you know who tells us this? Josephus, who's a Jewish historian who lived from 37 AD to about 100 AD, and he was in Jerusalem at the time. In 62 AD, this is when Josephus says this occurred. Hegesippus, another writer who lived later, says the same kind of thing. So James dies as a martyr in the city of Jerusalem in 62 AD. Again, the New Testament documents don't tell us this. Somebody else does. We also know that Acts is written by 62 AD. The book of Acts, why? Well, there's a number of reasons. They're all listed in the book. But if you notice, how does Paul, or how does the book of Acts end? Where is Paul when it ends? Chapter 28. He's in Rome under house arrest. He's not quite dead yet. He hasn't been killed. And there's no mention in the book of Acts about the death of Paul or the death of Peter. And by the way, who are the main characters in the book of Acts? Peter and Paul, not Mary. Just Peter and Paul. First half Peter, second half Paul. There's no mention of their deaths. But there are mention of a couple of other deaths. Stephen is killed. And then James, the half-brother of John, not this James, the half-brother of John is killed. But there's no mention of the main characters being killed. Paul or Peter. Why do you think that is? Not quite dead yet. It'd be like reading a book about, say, Martin Luther King, and you read all about him, and there's no description of his death in there. When are you going to assume that book was written? Yeah, prior to 1968. It's kind of too big of a deal to leave out. Oh, by the way, he was assassinated. No, they're not going to leave that out. There are several other reasons as well, but Acts is written by 62. We know 1 Corinthians is written by 55 or 56 AD, even atheists agree with that. We can figure out when 1 Corinthians was written. And most important to that is there's a creed in 1 Corinthians. Chapter 15, verses 3 to 8. I'm just going to read this because this is very interesting. This is probably, in terms of eyewitness evidence, this evidence is the most powerful evidence for the resurrection in the entire Bible. It's 1 Corinthians 15, verses 3 to 8. And when I say this is a creed, what this means is early on in Christianity, they memorized very short sections of the truth and passed it on orally because they were in an oral culture. Today, I don't even know what my phone number is. Why? I don't have to remember it. It's in my phone. Okay? We can hardly remember anything anymore. They, back then, would remember long, long stretches of prose. This is just a small section that Paul received from other apostles. Here's what he says. And by the way, when I read this, listen to how many times you hear the word that, okay? The word that. You ready? There's a rhythm to this thing. Here we go. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, he appeared to me. How many times do you hear the word that? Five times, right? There's a rhythm to this. People could remember it easily. Notice he's got the main eyewitnesses to the resurrection listed right here. This was a creed that was remembered very early on. And the reason this is early on, even though it's written down here, is even atheist scholars agree this is pre-40 AD. This goes all the way back to the event itself. Some say within just a few months of the resurrection, this originated. This is very early testimony. So even though it was written down in writing in 55, it originates much earlier. Now, if Acts is written by 62, what must be prior to Acts? Yeah, Luke. Why? Because Luke is the author of both, and he's writing them to the same person, O excellent Theophilus. And in the book of Acts, he says, in my first work, O excellent Theophilus. So the first work is what? The Gospel of Luke. And many, of course, believe Mark is prior to Luke. And who knows, Matthew maybe even prior to that. But we're very early now. In fact, Paul actually quotes Luke as being Scripture. Paul! So this is early stuff. Now, I know I may be going out on a limb here, but I'd have to say that Paul wrote all of his works before he died. Think that's fair? Okay, here are the undisputed works of Paul. 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Romans, Galatians, there are others, but that's all you need to establish the early testimony of the resurrection. And here's the key point. Most, if not all, the New Testament documents are written prior to 70 AD. How do we know that? Yeah, they don't mention the temple or the city. The entire country being destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. Nothing. Not a word of this. Actually, it is mentioned in one place. Jesus actually predicts it. He predicts it. You remember? He's standing there on the Mount of Olives. In fact, we've gone to Israel. We've done the teaching right there at the Mount of Olives. And he says that not one stone will be left upon another with regard to the temple. And the apostles ask him, disciples ask him, when are these things going to occur? And he says, before this generation passes away, all these things will occur. And when did he say that? He said that about 30 AD. What's a generation? 40 years. When did it happen? 70 AD. But nobody comes back and says, look, Jesus was right. Why do they not say that? Because it hadn't happened yet. I mean, imagine you're reading a book about Lower Manhattan, you're reading about the World Trade Towers being constructed, and then there's no mention of the World Trade Towers coming down in 9/11. When are you going to assume the book was written? Had to be prior to 9/11. Now, 70 AD is the most cataclysmic event, one of the most cataclysmic events in Jewish history. I mean, the entire country is basically taken over. Their temples destroyed. According to Josephus, maybe a million people died. Maybe he was exaggerating. Whatever it was a lot. And nobody mentions it? That's too big of an issue to leave out. You say, that's an argument from silence. It doesn't prove anything. No, it's not just an argument from silence. Why? Because the New Testament documents are written as if the temple is still standing while they're writing. In fact, John, in John 5, 2, he talks about the Pool of Bethesda. Well, the Pool of Bethesda was destroyed in 70 AD, but he's writing as if it's still there. In fact, you can go there now. In fact, the Pool of Bethesda was discovered in the 1800s. If you go to Israel now, and you know where the Temple Mount is, if you go to the Sheep Gate, which is right to the north of the Temple Mount, and take a right, you're going to be right there at the Pool of Bethesda. You can go see this whole thing right now. It's right there. John says, there is a pool right north of the Sheep Gate. Well, it wasn't in 70 AD. So this is early stuff, which means this is during the age of the eyewitnesses. It's very difficult for historical revisionists to overpower or refute the true historical facts why the eyewitnesses are still alive, because the eyewitnesses can, of course, correct it. This is very early testimony. So we've got early testimony, which is critical to know whether these people are telling the truth. Secondly, we also have eyewitness testimony. They claim to be eyewitnesses. They say it over and over again in there. The question is, can they prove to be eyewitnesses? That's the question, and that's what we're going to look at right now. And I think they can prove it. Why? Because they put historical crosshairs in the text. Talk about the gun show here, right? They put historical crosshairs in the text. In fact, I'm going to read a couple of verses. This is from Luke chapter 3. As I read these two verses, ask yourself if it sounds like this guy Luke is making this whole thing up. Here's what he says. In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, Herod, tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Itria, and Trachonicus, and Licinius, tetrarch of Abilene, during the high priest of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of God came to John, son of Zechariah, in the desert. Does it sound like he's making up a story? An exact date is given, 29 AD. How do we know that's the date? Because it is the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, who came into power in 14 AD. So he's saying, look, yoo-hoo, it's 29 AD. All of these eight people are known from history. They're all known to live at this exact time. This is not a once upon a time story. It would be like somebody today saying it's the sixth year of the Obama administration. Joe Biden's the vice president. What's his name? Why can't I think of his name all of a sudden? Boehner. Boehner is the head of the House of Representatives, and Mitch McConnell is the head of the Senate, and John Kerry is the Secretary of State, and I go on and on and on. You know exactly when I'm talking about, right? That's what Luke is doing here. He's putting historical crosshairs in the text. In fact, scholars say the book of Acts, which Luke wrote, is authoritative. This is Sir William Ramsay. He was an archaeologist who, when he started to study the book of Acts, didn't think it was accurate. And then here's what he said after he finished. I began with a mind unfavorable to it, but more recently I found myself brought into contact with the book of Acts as an authority for the topography, antiquities, and society of Asia Minor. It was gradually borne in upon me that in various details the narrative showed marvelous truth. Now, why does he say that? Because there are 84 historically confirmed eyewitness details in the book of Acts alone from chapter 13 to chapter 28. They're all listed in chapter 10 of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. These are very obscure details. Roman historian Colin Hemmer went through the book of Acts with a fine-tooth comb and found all of these 84 references could only be explained by somebody who was there or knew somebody who was there. Like, for example, Luke gets the right, like, mayor in a small town in the Mediterranean, correct? The equivalent of a mayor. How did he know that? He gets the slang spoken in that small town correctly. He gets wind directions right, weather patterns right. He even has the depth of the water off Malta right when they run aground in Acts chapter 27. Luke says we took soundings, it was 120 feet. Then we took soundings again as we headed toward the shore. It was 90 feet. Then we cut anchors and we ran aground. Well, in the 1970s, divers found four anchors in 90 feet of water in St. Thomas's Bay off Malta. These are the anchors that Bob Cornuke traced down to say these are the anchors of Paul's shipwreck. They found no ship near these. They just found four anchors. They found a ship later on, a little distance from that point, with no anchors. And these anchors test from the first century, a Corinthian freighter. Now, how is Luke getting all these details right about wind directions, water depths, and all? Well, how is he getting all this right? As he was there. That's exactly right. In fact, if you notice in the book of Acts, in chapter 16, the narration shifts from they did this and they did that to we did this and we did that. Luke apparently joins Paul in the town of Troas and goes with him the rest of the way in his missionary journey. And so he's recording all these details. And while he's recording all these details about obscure things like wind directions and water depths, he's saying that Paul is doing miracles. Now, why would he tell the truth about trivial details and lie about miracles? It doesn't make any sense. You're saying, well, the reason we can't trust these documents is precisely because there are miracles in them. That's what we call an anti-supernatural bias. Why do you have an anti-supernatural bias when the greatest miracle, the creation of the universe, has already occurred? You can't lock God out of this universe. If he created the universe, he can obviously intervene in it anytime he wants. You're begging the question against miracles. You're assuming they don't occur. That's not evidence. That's a philosophical presupposition. Also, there are 59, or I should say Luke includes several other of these details in his gospel. There are 59 historically confirmed or historically probable eyewitness details in John's gospel as well. These are all listed, and I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, chapter 10. And this is very interesting. One of the things Dr. Geiser and I did in researching this book is we looked at people in the New Testament that are cited and wanted to know if they were cited anywhere else. And we found over 30 of them have been cited elsewhere. What do I mean by these people? Here are some of the people that are cited in the New Testament that are found outside the New Testament. The Agrippas, Bernice, Augustus, Caiaphas, Felix. All these people who are listed in the New Testament documents are found outside the New Testament, whether through other writings or archaeology. Look, the Bible even gets all the Herods right. James is mentioned by Josephus. So is John the Baptist. In fact, if you add Jesus to this list, you got 32, and that's not an exhaustive list. Jesus is mentioned by 10 ancient non-Christian sources within 150 years of his life. That's what we call extra-biblical testimony. That's one of the E's that's in the book as well. Now you say, well, how do we even know, how do we know these people exist? As I said, archaeology is one way we know. This is an archaeological discovery regarding Pilate. This is found in the coastal town of Caesarea. This is an inscription found in 1961 that shows Pilate existed, and Pilate also is mentioned by Josephus as well. Not only do we know that Caiaphas existed, we have his bones. This is a burial box called an ossuary that the Jews used between 20 BC and 70 AD. Since they believed in a bodily resurrection, what they would do after a year or so of the body decaying, they would go back to the body, exhume the remains, and put the remains in a limestone box known as an ossuary. There's been hundreds of these ossuaries found, by the way. And in 1990, they discovered this one. And when they discovered it, you see how ornate it is? They discovered on the side of it an inscription, and the inscription identified the remains as the remains of Caiaphas. Inside was the body of a 60-year-old man or so and his family. Now, who was Caiaphas? The high priest who did what? Sentenced Jesus to die. He stood before Jesus. If you saw the Passion, he's the one in the purple robe. And he said, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, I am. And you will see the Son of Man coming with great power on the clouds. And immediately Caiaphas tore his robes and said, blasphemy, you must die. We have that guy's bones. And by the way, if you go to Jerusalem today and you go to the Jerusalem Museum right across from the Knesset there in Jerusalem, this thing is sitting on a table. You can just see it sitting there. I mean, it's right there in the open. You could touch it, but don't, because you'll be shot if you do. But they just leave this stuff out there. It's just sitting there. In fact, you may have heard some of these other ossuaries, these other sensational ossuaries, like the Jesus ossuary. Have you heard of that one? Back in 1981, a discovery was made of a Jesus ossuary. And so James Cameron, the director of the Titanic, the director of Avatar, the director of Terminator, all these movies, he's a movie guy, he goes, wow, that's the Jesus ossuary. Now, if there's a Jesus ossuary, what does that say about Christianity? It's false, right? Because his bones are in a box somewhere. He didn't rise from the dead. The problem is even the archaeologists who discovered it said this has nothing to do with Jesus of Nazareth. In fact, Joshua was like the sixth most popular name in Palestine in the first century. Do you know how many Jesus ossuaries they've discovered? As of 2006, last time I looked, they've discovered 22 Jesus ossuaries. None of them are the Jesus of the Bible. But that would, you know, to say this has to be Jesus of the Bible is like going out into a graveyard and seeing John on a tombstone and going, it's got to be John the Baptist. Right. Now, James Cameron, of course, made a documentary of it that was picked up by the Discovery Channel. And so there was this big deal, and virtually no archaeologist agreed it's Jesus of Nazareth. But yet, the Discovery Channel wanted to do it. Don't believe everything you watch on TV. I know this is a bit shocking, also. But don't believe everything you read on the internet, either. Okay. I found it on the internet. Oh, it's got to be true, then. All right, so ossuaries are very interesting. You can find them. Also, by the way, we know crucifixion occurred. Why? This is an actual heel bone discovered in Jerusalem in the first century AD. There's the nail going through the heel bone. That's just a mock-up to show you the relative angle of the nail going through the heel bone. Again, if you go to Jerusalem today, you'll see this thing sitting out there too in the Jerusalem Museum. There are literally hundreds of these kinds of archaeological discoveries. Now, this doesn't prove everything in the Bible is true, but it does corroborate the fact that much of what the Bible talks about is historical. Now, don't let this get out of the room because it's politically incorrect, okay? But did you know that archaeologists often use the Bible to find stuff? Yeah, they do. They find stuff with the Bible. Imagine that. All right, embarrassing testimony. This is so embarrassing, we're going to have to wait till after the break. Okay, but I do want to take some questions on anything we've covered to this point. Any questions?